Welcome to the Lydian Events podcast, and we are continuing with the first part of our work with Debbie Eisen, and we're going to be talking about all sorts of subjects with regard to the mental well-being and how we can cope with issues that are more than likely arising in this very difficult situation that we are all in. And so, Debbie, welcome.
Hello.
And Debbie, how has your week been? Have you enjoyed yourself this week?
Yeah, I've had quite a busy week, obviously working with lots of clients as usual and spending time with the family, which has been great.
Absolutely excellent. Today's subject, Debbie, is anxiety. But before we start, I'd like to point out to the listener that Debbie intentionally wanted the podcast to be short so that when you download them, and all you need to do is literally just click that blue download button, it'll go straight to your phone, straight to your computer, straight to your tablet. There's no need to put in any emails or anything of that nature. You can do it. And Debbie wanted the podcast to be short, so when you're re-listening to them, you can get to each part pretty easily. So, Debbie, anxiety. Would you explain to us what exactly anxiety is?
So different people would describe anxiety in different ways. From my experience of working with clients, it tends to be that their mind has gone on to overdrive, often thinking about different possibilities that may or may not happen. And that is often coupled with physical symptoms. So it might be tightness in the chest, shortness of breath, hot or cold sensations, tingling, inability to focus or concentrate. And what's quite interesting often is when people are experiencing those anxiety attacks, they will notice the physical symptoms, but may not be necessarily aware of the thought processes that are going with it. So my role as a therapist is to work with them to find out what specifically is causing their mind to sort of go on overdrive, what's causing that anxiety, and then finding a way to help them perceive those situations or thoughts in a different way.
Now, so when I, for example, used to go out on the dive boats and we were going to go to a particularly deep dive on a wreck or something of that nature, those feelings of tension, those feelings of perhaps apprehension, that would be literally a symptom, early symptom of anxiety.
Definitely. However, sometimes it's appropriate to experience anxiety. Perhaps if we're going into an unfamiliar situation or a situation that maybe we could be in some sort of danger, it's a biological function. If you think about it, going back to sort of when we were cavemen and women, we might have had to have fled very, very quickly from a hostile or dangerous situation. So our brain would have needed to send signals all around our body to tell us, right, we need to act, we need to respond. The issue sometimes can be, however, that nowadays those threats aren't threats in the same way. It's just that our mind still perceives them to be threats. And when that anxiety goes into overdrive or we're unable to calm it down or shut it off, that's when it transitions into being a problem.
I see. Very interesting. And is there different ways that anxiety can manifest itself?
Certainly. So for some people, it can be quite acute and it can be a specific situation that triggers it off. For example, fear of flying or fear of spiders or some sort of anticipatory event such as going for a job interview. Whereas for other people, it can be more generalised. So they experience it in a range of different situations throughout their day-to-day life. And it can be quite chronic and long-term.
So is it a cumulative then? Unless you get to grips with the initial feelings of anxiety, if you don't get to grips with it and understand it, then it can really become a long-term problem that might become more and more difficult to deal with.
Definitely, because if we go back to the way the brain functions, the neurons in the brain cells, will create paths. And I see them as lighting up like little Christmas tree lights. And what these different neural paths do is they tell us how to act, how to feel, how to respond. And so when we experience a situation, our brains have to very quickly decide how we're going to act or respond. So there'll be a neural pathway that lights up and tells us what to do. And we will have one of those for that anxiety-based response. And the more we go to it, the stronger it becomes. And the stronger it becomes, the more likely it is then that we go to that as our first response. And it can then start to spread into lots of different areas unless that underlying root cause is dealt with.
So in a way, it is okay to have a certain level of anxiety, but one should be aware that if it gets a little bit out of hand, then it needs to be perhaps kept into checks. But what we need to establish first is it's perfectly acceptable and perfectly normal to have a certain level of anxiety.
Most certainly, particularly if you're in a situation where there's a threat or something unfamiliar. Like, as you've said, it's just if it's prolonged and ongoing and it starts to interfere with our day-to-day lives, our interactions with others and our ability to do different things, that's when we need to take charge and sort it out.
So could you, apart from a physical feeling, is it possible to, I know that emotional feelings are physical, but there is a slight difference between the two. Is it normal to have an emotional response to an anxious situation? You know, could you become perhaps tearful or feel, if you like, apprehensive, an emotional apprehension? Would that be normal as well?
That's perfectly normal. And some people would even experience the extreme of having panic attacks when that anxiety becomes so strong. Mm-hmm. So that there's an overwhelming emotion, a fear attached as well as the physical symptoms.
Yeah, because I'm assuming you would like to get to talk a little bit about panic attacks when you start to talk about how to deal with these things. But but panic attacks are very much a physiological result of the way that one breathes, and it's difficult to keep that physiological problem when it happens. It's really difficult to overwhelm that. So understanding what's happening is probably as important as going further and finding out solutions to it. So what we're establishing first is what you're establishing first is, one, do not think that you're going through a situation that's abnormal. I believe you're saying to me that everybody at some stage in their lives are going to be anxious about anything. Could be even visiting the dentist, as you say, flying, going to see the bank manager, or even actually filling out a loan form online. All of these things can give you a feeling of being uptight, Debbie.
Certainly. That's definitely the case.
Would you say, I mean, sometimes in the past, I've had a feeling of almost like breathlessness, even as almost as if there's no air in my lungs. And that's the first feeling I get when I'm in a situation that can become, shall we say, uncomfortable, or I have a confrontation. And as you know, I'm a very non-confrontational person. But if I do have a feeling where I might have a confrontation, it's almost like the breath's been drawn out of my lungs. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. And it's really positive that you notice that first physiological response, because when you do become aware of that, you can then do something to change it. So what I always say with breathing is very important. However, it needs to be done correctly. So you'll read lots of different information telling you that if you start to feel anxious and panic, to take some long, deep breaths. Now, the key part that is often missed out is it is important the length of those breaths. So in order for the correct carbon dioxide exchange to take place in the body, you need to have a longer, slower exhale, a longer, slower out breath to help to calm you down. Because even if you do those deep breaths, if they're in and out at the same length, it will still cause that anxious feeling in your body.
Yes, yes. Did you want to, shall we just discuss the physiological aspects of what's happening when
Yes.
people breathe? Because as a diver, I have a full understanding of what's happening about breath and breathing, particularly with very dry air. It's not very moist and things of that nature. So the fact that you've got to really control the breathing is essential. It's essential not to flush your lungs. That's basically how people need to think, isn't it? Don't flush
Definitely.
Your lungs. So let's go through what happens. You feel uptight, you get that can't breathe moment. That's the initial trigger. And then what you do is then you start to take deep, deep, deep breaths deep into the lung. And it's not a correct breathing because you're not breathing from the diaphragm.
Exactly.
So you're getting a full flush. What happens then is you're flushing out the carbon dioxide that resides in your body, which is absolutely essential for you to breathe. And when it's gone, then the trigger happens. Could you explain it a bit further?
Well, I think you've summed that up really beautifully. And that's where you've got to be careful and control the breath, because if you're taking those big deep gasps in and then exhaling too rapidly, it's going to make you feel dizzy. It's going to increase the panic. Yep. It's going to possibly make you feel nauseous. So it's all about slowing it down and controlling it.
Interesting. Now, what I could also say to people is your body is the most incredible thing, and your body and your brain and your breathing, your heart, lungs, all of your respirational system works in a wonderful way. There's a little sensor in your body that can literally measure its alkalinity and its acidity. And either side of about 7.1, either side, you're in trouble. If you heavily breathe out, you're flushing the carbon out of your lungs. And when you flush that out, your body becomes alkaline. Now, this is something that people believe is good for health. But you need to remember that carbolic acid is made by bubbling carbon dioxide through water. That's how it's made. So if you flush that acid out, then you become alkaline. And when you become alkaline, the physiological reaction is that your nerve endings become highly sensitized. First thing you get, tingling.
Yes.
So what you have to do is, as Debbie and I know, you have to hold your breath and literally do exactly the opposite to what your body's telling you to do. Hold your breath. You won't die. Your body will automatically get you to take a breath in, but hold it. Just take a gentle hold it, and that's it. So that's fair advice. And one of the finest advice that I could ever, please don't let me, anybody believe I'm taking over Debbie's show here.
I think it's wonderful. This is why we do this. It's a partnership, isn't it? Because we've got lots of knowledge between us.
We have. One of the finest things that I ever heard about panic attacks was a consultant surgeon who said to somebody who was having a panic attack, just let it kill you. tell it to kill you. Absolutely tell it to kill you. And of course, you and I know that that's the law of reverse intention, paradoxical intention. As soon as you say kill me, it can't do it, so you lose interest.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things when people are experiencing panic attacks, the thought that often comes into people's mind is, I'm going to die, it's going to kill me, this is something really terrible. But in reality, the worst that will happen is you might end up fainting or passing out for a few moments, but then your body will regain balance, because you're not going to die. It isn't anything that is disastrous that's going on. It is simply that you've gone into a state of panic and you're trying to find a way of getting equilibrium back.
And we can both reinforce to anybody who does have these feelings that the sensations that you are literally, the physiological sensations, they don't go away immediately. You've got to give a good 15, 20 minutes before they dissipate. And that's another one of the things that you've got to remember, because you can go round in circles and think, oh, it's not going away, it's not going away. Your body needs time to get back into balance, Debbie.
Absolutely. And I think this is where it's really important what you said before, that you start to notice the first signs of when that anxiety is creeping up. If you can become aware at that stage, that's when you can start to put things into place, coping strategies, before it gets to the stage where it becomes a full-blown panic attack or overwhelming anxiety. So one of the first things I encourage clients with anxiety to do is, it's based on acupressure. So the idea of Chinese medicine is that in our body, we've got lots and lots of acupressure points that are responsible for different organs in the body, but also different emotions. And on the outside of our thumbnail, there's an acupressure point. And when that acupressure point is squeezed or tapped, it can help to reduce feelings of anxiety. And if you think about it, when you're in the womb, when you're a baby, what all babies do is they learn to suck their thumbs. And the womb is quite a an unpredictable environment. You've got lots of sounds, lots of movements, lots of things going on. So in the brain, one of the earliest pathways that gets set is that sucking thumb equals comfort. So by squeezing the thumb or by rubbing alongside the nail bed, that can help to alleviate anxiety. And that's something you can do anywhere at any time.
Fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Are there any other strategies that people can use?
There's loads of different strategies. So quite often I will teach clients tapping, emotional freedom technique. There's lots of different variations of tapping. And that is, once again, where you tap on different acupressure points in a sequence, and it can help you to feel calmer and more relaxed. And what I've got, which I can send over to Ian afterwards, is I've done a little YouTube video on that, just going through that sequence.
Excellent.
So if it's something that anybody wants to look at, it's there for them and they can do that.
So on Debbie's page, you'll find this YouTube video and it'll be there for you to immediately have a look at and go through it. Now, one has to be careful that when we're researching and looking, particularly in the aspect of anxiety and panic attacks, that you have to be careful. It's a bit like yawning. When you're watching something, you can end up thinking, oh, I've got that feeling. It's like the hypochondriac, isn't it? It doesn't matter what you read, the hypochondriac has got the disease, even though the doctor and everybody says, no, there's nothing wrong with you. And they'll say, no, I know there's something wrong. Yeah. So be careful when you're watching to it. So if you go to watch something, if you go with the attitude and say, this is going to help me overcome my anxiety, rather than, oh, I don't really want to watch that. Different way of looking at things, different way of hearing things, isn't it? So set your attitude up right. This is going to help me.
Definitely. And what I would also say with anxiety is that, particularly if somebody's had it for a long time, it quite often starts to become somebody's identity. They have anxiety, my anxiety. So one of the things you can do is also depersonalize it. So it's the anxiety that I'm feeling as opposed to my anxiety. And also recognizing who you are as a person beyond the anxiety. Because quite often when we've got something like that, it provides all sort of limitations for us. And once those limitations have been taken away, or once the anxiety has been taken away, there can sometimes be a feeling of being lost of, who am I without this anxiety?
Very interesting.
So I think it's really important that if you're ready to overcome your anxiety or reduce it, take some time to think, how do I want my life to be instead? How is it going to be different? Who am I when I no longer need that anxiety?
So the consultant was right when he said, tell it to kill you. When he was saying about the panic attack, tell it. He was separating the symptom from it becoming yours. He said, tell it to kill you. It was a very clever way of researching or thinking about that is this particular issue when you're getting it. You see, I knew somebody some years ago very, very well indeed, and he was very successful, and he used to drink like a fish. And I'm very partial, as you know, Debbie, to a Guinness or two. And it was in those days when everybody rendezvoused at the pub at 6 o'clock and all your friends got there, and you sorted the world out from everything was sorted out in the pub in those days. And there was a guy, Rod, his name was, I won't give you a surname, but he was very, very successful, but he was so, so nervous. I said to him one day, I said, God, why do you drink so much? He said, I'm nervous, anxiety, terrible anxiety. So it's the only thing that overcomes it, alcohol. And I said, have you ever thought that maybe your alcohol's actually making it worse? And he said, it probably is. Yeah. But the story becomes shortened if I say to you that he worked as a salesman for a BMW agents, and he was always under pressure. No matter how many cars he sold, he was always under pressure to sell more. And he got to a stage where he couldn't really sell any more than he was selling. The strangest of things happened. I was talking to him one day and he was completely chilled out.
Yeah.
Completely relaxed. And he'd stopped drinking his whiskey. He was just drinking his beer. And he just got a completely different attitude. I said, God, Rod, you're so different. I said, what's happened to you? He said, I've changed the bloody job.
Yep.
So it could be something that's causing the attacks that you don't necessarily can put your finger on. So If you can't understand why you've got your anxiety, that's when it's really worth phoning up Debbie or somebody who is nearer to you or travelling to see Debbie and getting to the bottom of what's causing the anxiety. Don't necessarily worry about the symptoms, because the anxiety could be like our friend Rod. It could be coming in and he didn't really realise it was his job that was causing it. So getting to the root of the problem is important.
Absolutely. And there's a few points from that story that I think are very useful. First thing is, it may be your environment or your circumstances that are causing that anxiety. And once you identify what those things are, once you change them, then that anxiety will go away. However, sometimes we need some help and support to overcome perhaps limiting beliefs in order to help us change that external situation. Other times, it may be that it's a learnt behaviour or a learnt response. We may have had a parent that's anxious all the time and we've modelled that behaviour, because children are phenomenal. They, if you think about it, from being very little, they learn how to walk, talk, interact by copying other people. And I used to be horrified when I was a primary school teacher when the children in the role play corner at 4 and 5 years old would be playing teachers. And I would watch them and I would listen. I think, is that how I sound? Because they mimicked me perfectly. So it may be that simply that you've learnt unhelpful coping strategies from someone else, or you've chosen something external like alcohol in order to deal with that.
Very
so going back to that scenario, what I would say is, at schools, we are taught very well how to read, how to write, how to do maths. However, we are not taught how to identify our emotions, how to communicate, how to work with what's going on in our body and our mind. And our teachers aren't taught that. Our parents aren't taught that. So quite often we pick up these unhelpful patterns because it's the best that our minds could do at the time. And that's why it's useful coming to somebody like me, because we've got loads and loads of different strategies and tools to help you do something different that's more beneficial and to change that mindset.
So you're actually giving them a replacement behaviour, that you're actually working through the whole dynamic of a person's being, the way that they think, the way that they conceive things, the way that they interact in daily lives. You're getting people to address all of those, to isolate something that may well not be resonating with their inner being, their unconscious mind. Because I know we had a conversation last year at one of the wellbeing shows where I said to you that I'm absolutely convinced that people self-destruct when the inner being is not happy with what they're doing. Like, to me, I am convinced, I could be wrong, but I'm convinced that a lot of relationships ultimately collapse, and there's lots of arguments and lots of friction within a relationship because one or both of the partners just don't want to be in it. So the unconscious mind sets up destruction strategies to in the conscious environment to make it collapse, to be away from it.
That makes perfect sense, because our mind will do whatever it needs to keep us safe. It's our best friend, and it will give us physical symptoms or make us feel in a certain way to get us out of unhelpful situations or places that we shouldn't be. What I would say, focusing on that idea of the sort of relationships breaking down, is once again, though, that doesn't always need to get to that point. We can learn strategies to communicate and interact more effectively with other people, and to deal with ourselves better and our own feelings in situations before it gets to that stage. It's just often people don't know they even have that choice.
I don't want to go too far away from the focus of the subject, but in a way, when you're taught and you're not taught at school how to have coping strategies with emotions, we're not allowed to be instructed by teachers, you know, you will feel this way if you don't get the good results. You know, don't worry about being not top of the class and things of that nature. Modern teaching is all about you've got to be at the top. So it's driving people, corralling people to work harder to get a top mark that not everybody can get. So that's so it causes a lot of friction, and that causes problems. And in the same way, people aren't really taught how to act within relationships. relationships. They enter into relationships with no prior knowledge whatsoever. One minute they're teenagers going out enjoying themselves. Next thing, they're married with the responsibility of a house, mortgage, all the rest of it. And they don't understand what they've got to do to make it work. Everything is about learning, I suppose, Debbie.
Absolutely. Everything in life is about learning. And it's remembering that our minds are amazing at learning. We just need to make sure that we're learning the right things. And if we've picked up any unhelpful behaviours or patterns or beliefs along the way, we have got the absolute power to change that. It's just sometimes, like when we're at school, we need somebody to teach us how to read and write. We also sometimes need people to teach us how to do something different, how to have coping strategies, how to deal with things more effectively.
And Debbie's lessons today are all about coping strategies about anxiety. So a brief synopsis is, initially, get to recognise the small markers, the small indications that your body's letting you know something's happening.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And just remember those symptoms that you're experiencing, they are symptoms. The behaviours that you're exhibiting are symptoms. It's getting to what's going on underneath is the key to resolving it all. Because if you don't get to the underlying beliefs or feelings, those, you might sort the symptom, but it's just going to manifest in a different way.
Would it be worthwhile, Debbie, keeping a little notebook and saying what time of day it was, what situation you were in, what happened an hour before? Would it be worth perhaps keeping a few notes of what's going on, see if there's any repetition?
Absolutely. And look at all factors. So look at sort of your environment that you're in, the people you're interacting with, and also what you were putting in your body. Ooh. So I had one man that came to me a few years ago, and he came and he says, I'm having these awful anxiety symptoms. I'm having heart palpitations. I feel panicked. I feel on edge all the time. And when I do my consultations, they're quite thorough. And I just decided to ask him, what's your diet like? And he says, oh, I have a really good diet. It's healthy. I have lots of vegetables, lots of fruit. And I said, and what do you drink? He's like, oh, well, I have 3 or 4 energy drinks sort of in the morning before I go to work. And then I tend to have another couple in the evening sort of after. And I said, all right, hang on there. These feelings may be anxiety based, but they could also be your body telling you that you've got lots of chemicals and things going on that are not helpful. So I said, the first thing we need to do is we need to stop you drinking all of those energy drinks, and then let's see what happened. So we had a session working together on getting him to recognize that those energy drinks were not giving him the energy that he wanted in the right way. And sure enough, all the anxiety disappeared. And it was simply a physiological response to something he shouldn't have been putting in his body to that extent.
Yes. And if anybody is listening to this and they don't think that caffeine to the major excess can kill them, they would do well to research the great comedian Marty Feldman, who drank between 30 and 40 cups of coffee a day while he was filming, and smoked 40 to 60 cigarettes a day. And if you look at his Wikipedia page and research anything about him, particularly where his wife's talking about him, they categorically know that he killed himself. He died one day because his heart just said, too much caffeine, too much nicotine, bang. So it's really, truly worth understanding that a couple of 3 cups of coffee is okay, but start to get a few more and you will get those coffee tingles, and you still get them even if you're drinking decaf, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yes, you see, that's another thing people don't realise with excess coffee. They think because it's decaffeinated, you're not going to get the tingles and excess, but you do. Now, we've covered a lot of ground here and we're running close to your 30-minute cutoff, but I really just want to go a little bit further. Okay. So first thing is, with anxiety, marker it, watch what's happening. When the early feelings start, relax, calm, close the eyes, perhaps listen to some music, read a book, do something that's opposed to what you're actually doing at the time, no matter what, because the anxiety attack is going to take up more time, Debbie, than actually dealing with it.
Absolutely.
Good. And then understand what's happening and say to yourself, as you're working to find out what's happening, say I'm doing this for the benefit of my well-being, the benefit of my health. So associate everything that you do with a benefit.
Definitely.
If you're getting yourself in deep water, do not hesitate. Seek good, sound, well-trained advice.
Absolutely. I mean, I had an elderly gentleman, he was in his late 70s, and he came to work with me a little while ago. And after a few sessions, we got this anxious feeling that he'd had for all of his adult life sorted. And he said to me at the end, he says, like, thank you so much. He said, the only thing is, he says, I've got no idea why I didn't do this years ago. I've been carrying around these feelings that have held me back. They've prevented me from going for the jobs that I've always wanted to go to, the relationships I've wanted to have. And all it took was 3 or 4 sessions and my life's different.
And there's nothing worse, I can say this at 63 years of age, than looking back and going, God almighty, I should have done that better. And knowing full well that I could have taken advice, or I could have listened to people, or I could have done the right thing that would have made my life better. Don't leave anything from having your tooth fixed to having a new haircut. Don't leave anything with procrastination. Go and do it. And if you're feeling anxious, deal with it. Re-listen to Debbie's podcast 3 or 4 times. Pick up all the things that really jump out at you, because if things jump out at you, there's a reason that they do, Debbie.
I agree. And what I would just like to add is, if you are having any sort of ill feelings, whether it's a physical thing that's going on or a mental and emotional issue, it's really important to prioritise yourself and get those things sorted. I see lots of, particularly mums, that end up putting themselves last because they're busy rushing around, sorting everybody else out, getting the kids to school, making sure the husband's shirts are ironed. And they end up becoming overwhelmed to the point where their issue is so strong that they're no benefit or no good to anybody else. So make sure that you prioritise your well-being, because if you are well, then you are well for everybody else. And then you're able to support everyone else more effectively in your life. See yourself as a priority.
And it's not a problem to seek things to laugh at. Don't always try and see the funny side of things, no matter how tragic they are.
Definitely.
Now, Debbie, have you got a thought for the day or the week ahead?
Yeah, so what I would just like to leave you with is, often in counselling and mind-based work, we focus on something called the miracle question. And this is the idea that if you woke up tomorrow and your issue was gone, your anxiety was gone, what's the first thing that you would notice? If you use this question, it begins to allow you to think about how things are going to be different, how things are going to change for the better. So what I invite you to do, whether it's anxiety you're dealing with or any other issue, is to just take some time this week to think about that miracle question, that when I have sorted this out, what's the first thing I will notice when I wake up the next morning?
That's I was just doing that as you were talking about it. It's quite a stopper, isn't it? It makes you think, oh God, that's a really interesting thought. And if you've got any ideas, or if you've got any results of following those words, just let us know, because it'd be very, very interesting.
That'd be wonderful.
Debbie, very short, very concise. Download the podcast. Listen to anything that jumps out of you, as I've already said, and take that at your unconscious is telling you something that you need to be recognizing. Have a good week. And we know we're in difficult times, but by looking after your mental health, not being afraid to seek help and advice, you'll certainly weather the storm better than most people.
Absolutely.
Debbie Eyton, thank you very much indeed. And we'll be speaking next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great week. Bye.